strap yourself in and get ready for Left Jab.
We're back on Left Jab. I'm Mark Walsh.
And I'm Dave Goodfriend.
And the dulcet tones of Warren Zevon. Ah, we miss him so. Warren Zevon introducing our next guest. Yes, boys and girls, he's here finally. The boy we've been talking about since the start of the show. It's Mike Daisy joining us in studio. Mike Daisy, master storyteller and solo performer. He currently is appearing in a show here at the Woolly Mammoth here in Washington, D.C. It's called If You See Something, Say Something. Mike Daisy, welcome to Left Jab.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I love the title. I assume, crazy, wacky connector that I am, that the title implies this one-man show is about national security.
And you are correct.
I'm good, Mark. Those of us who ride the metro every day, Mark,
yes,
know that when you get onto the subway here in Washington, D.C., every now and then you'll just hear this voice wafting from the rafters that says, if you see something, say something.
Well, Mike,
is that your bag?
hey, that's kind of a personal question. Speaking of cutting your nuts off when Jesse Jackson. But let me let's get the details out. Are you from D.C.?
No, I'm originally from Maine, and I live in New York.
I'm flying to Maine just moments from now.
Oh, fantastic.
But lovely Portland.
A lovely Portland, yes.
Portland Jet Board, or whatever they call it up there. But so you're from Maine, and have you've appeared, it sounds like, in the bio, you've had an extraordinarily robust career in theater throughout the U.S. You've appeared on David Letterman. You've had all sorts of fun stuff happen. What was the genesis of this show?
Oh, well, the genesis of this show is that all the shows arise out of my own personal obsessions, and I think a lot of us in the country would share. I'm deeply obsessed with what I see happening in my country, and so I really wanted to do a show that talked about homeland security and talked about the idea of security and what it means to be secure. And I wanted to do a show that talked about the connections between the huge changes that happened post 9/11 and in the past, the huge changes that happened right after World War II, at the beginning of the Cold War. And so the show is about both security today, and it's about a trip I took last fall. I went to Los Alamos and down to the Trinity site, because there's one day a year they let people go to where the first nuclear weapon was detonated in the desert. And you can actually stand at ground zero. It is only somewhat radioactive now.
Is that why your hair is glowing?
It is, actually. It is.
Checking.
And, you know, things you do for art. But so I'm obsessed with these things, and so the show is an attempt to sort of weave these stories together to sort of talk about the state of security today.
I've been to Los Alamos, to the museum. I did not go the day where you can go to Trinity, but as Robert Oppenheimer said when he saw the bomb, I am become death, the shatterer of worlds, quoting the Bhagavad Gita. And I think it's an amazing place, and I wish more Americans were conscious of that. Was that specific visit the genesis of what was going on in your head when you decided to make this show happen?
No. I was working on the show for a long time before it. The trip was research. You know, it was sort of I try to go out and just experience firsthand things in order to find the connective stories and the tissue that goes between sort of factual data and the show.
Well, we're talking with Mike Daisy. Mike joins us in the studio here at XM on your Left Jab show that you're hopefully enjoying and not unenjoying, because we enjoy having you. And
unenjoying?
Mike, you like that?
You need some more Starbucks.
I need
over
some
there.
More something.
Because I am unenjoying your grammatical grammars.
Oh, Mr. Teacherhead. Mike currently is appearing at the Woolly Mammoth Theater here in Washington, D.C., which for those of you who are near the Washington, D.C. area or live here in Washington, D.C., we know XM is nationwide, but Woolly Mammoth is one of my favorite theaters. I think they do a fantastic job. It's a lovely space as well. So how's your experience been at Woolly Mammoth so far?
Oh, it's really been fantastic. Yeah. I mean, they're wonderful people, and we've performed theaters everywhere, and this particular theater is beautifully sized for the monologues. I think it's going to be really fantastic.
Now, this is a little bit of an unfair question. You can always tell me to go pound sand, but is there any part of the monologue you could recite now to sort of give us a flavor for the show?
I can't really recite it because the show is performed extemporaneously, so there isn't actually a script of any kind.
So there's no script.
No.
And so when you came up with the idea, how did you do that? You just sort of say, I have goalposts in mind that I want to do, and then
yes, very much. I mean, the same way that you guys create your show every day.
No, we have no idea. We have no.
Well, there you go.
No, there you go.
they put us in front of these mics and say, "Speak."
I create an outline that gives shape to the whole arc of it, and so each scene, each one of the scenes is a page of the outline. But if you saw my notes, it's just they look like a crazy person wrote.
Well, follow up on Dave's unfair question, which actually your answer was remarkably shocking to both of us in a great way. Obviously, as a business traveler, and I travel a lot in business, as does Dave, because we actually have a life outside of XM.
Hard to believe.
Shocking as that may be to anybody listening. But as I travel on business, it's impossible for me, or I would argue any sentient human being, to observe TSA and the process that we go through to get on a plane. And now it's starting to kick into trains as well. And not, at least in my, not to almost burst out laughing derisively at the absurdity of what you're actually asked to do and the absurdity of what they're not doing for you as a citizen, i.e. keeping us safe. That's my opinion. Is that part of your show? Is that part of your thinking, or do you have a whole new take on that?
No, that's very much part of it. I mean, I'm fascinated by security because it's the reason it's become such a force, I think, in our modern life right now is that it's a universal. There is no one who actually wants to be insecure. Like, everyone wants security, and this makes it an incredible vulnerability, because since everyone wants security and everyone can agree on something, it can be a tremendous lever to try to push people toward other agendas you might have. And I'm fascinated by the TSA. Like, I think a huge amount of their work is busy work. I mean, I think a huge amount of it is... there are no magical liquid explosives.
Yeah.
You know, there are no magical binary liquid explosives.
3 ounces or more.
Yeah. If you have more than 3 ounces, you know, like...
magically, it becomes explosive.
Not even Jack Bauer could make a magical binary explosive
He's
liquid.
Been trying.
It doesn't exist. You know, they would need a Bunsen burner, a whole chemistry set. They'd have to set it up in the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know, I think we'd notice that.
You think? Know?
I think we would.
Yeah.
So, or maybe we could just forbid Bunsen burners.
And then
we wouldn't have to go through this.
But they do allow lighters on the plane.
Now they do. Yeah.
Well, what's fascinating, though, is that they ban things and or the shoes. The fact that if you use this magical device called Google, you can discover very early that for years and years, we've had no ability to detect explosives in shoes.
Nice.
They're only now slowly starting to roll out machines that may be able sometimes to detect explosives in shoes. So all these years that we're taking off our shoes, you really have to examine it. Like, why are we doing that? And the conventional answer is we're doing that because it will tell people that it's safe. But I would submit that all it does is remind people, that's right, once there was a shoe bomber.
Right.
I think what it actually does, it's a cover your ass maneuver so that the TSA can say, see, we tried to do something. So this is our demonstration. It's very much tied into the mindset of the federal bureaucracy. It's just, this is our demonstration that we tried to do something, even though it's clear.
That's a great insight.
I would even take it farther, and maybe you touch on this in your show. What I love is each time I go, I see a new gleaming machine, generally made by GE or some other large government provider.
I love the one you step into, the door closed behind
you. The puffy thing.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, the first time my wife went in there, she literally jumped like a squirrel because she didn't know the puffs were coming. And now they warn people when the puffs come because my wife literally jumped up and her hair goes flying. But I see this sort of giant corporate bureaucracy of new machines to extend the TSA experience, to me, adding on to the absurdity.
Oh, yeah. It adds on the absurdity. And I mean, a big part of the monologue is talking about the growth of the military-industrial complex. And there's a huge amount of corporate money that, like, connects around the defense industry. And that's when I'm talking about the birth of the Cold War. And that now connects around the security industry. It's the fastest growing business in any of the federal sectors is to be a contractor for the defense industry. Mm-hmm. And most of the most of the defense industry providers are now opening security industry adjunctes because it's so profitable.
Huge.
It's the same business. It's the same exact business.
We are talking with Mike Daisy. He joins us here in the studio at XM at our headquarters in downtown Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. He is joining us on Left Jab, the show here on XM that I, Mark Walsh,
and I, Dave Goodfriend,
co-host every weekend. Mike is a master storyteller and solo performer. He's currently at the Woolly Mammoth Theater here in Washington, D.C. with his show, If You See Something, Say Something. Do you talk about this new clear card idea and how there's kind of a
way... I was just thinking of that, Mark.
Of how there's a way to buy a speedy way to go through this absurd process?
Is Yeah. I mean,
what is the clear card? I just saw it yesterday for the first time.
Yeah, for the first time you saw it?
Yeah, I saw it up close. A buddy of mine was actually buying one.
Yeah.
I said, let me just say about this.
Yeah.
We're at the airport. I'm seeing him off. He said, I can finish up my clear card purchase. I said, what's that? He said, follow me. This is National Airport right here in Washington, D.C.
Not Reagan National.
It's National Airport. So we go up to the little stand. They say it's $128. Mm. So he forks over $128. They say, please step up to this little eyeball scanner. So it's got two little round holes, and he's looking into it. And then you hear a voice say, step closer, step farther, step to the right, step to the left. You hear the camera go off.
It's a retinal scanner, I assume, yes.
It's actually an iris scan, but okay. You know, who's asking, really?
Yeah.
Then he gets his card, he's shown his passport, he's shown everything, he's got his card, and I say, all right, well, let's find out what this does for you. And we go to the security lines, and instead of going into one line, he gets to go into another line.
Yeah.
And then once through that line, he gets to go into exactly the same line as everybody else to stand in line to go through the metal detectors. And I said, what'd you just pay for, man?
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, like, what what did you just pay for? And it's got GE stamped over it. It's like the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's what is that?
Well, Mike Daisy in the studio with us is going to comment on the clear card. What's up with that?
Oh, it's an opportunity to pay people. It's an opportunity. It's great. It's an opportunity to pay people to give them your, no, not for nothing. You're paying them to give them far more personal data than we've ever authorized before. Yeah. But it's fine because not only are you consenting to it, you're paying for the privilege of giving them that data. It's a remarkable opportunity. I'm surprised we all don't have one.
What do you get? I still don't understand it. How dumb are we? What do you get?
You get screwed.
Yeah.
Oh.
You get screwed.
The government.
Well, okay.
That is the question, I think, also. How dumb are we that Dave just said? I do think one of the things that maybe you touch on as well is the fear of me laughing derisively at the absurdity of what I'm doing. I'm afraid if I do that, they'll take me out of the line, do a body cavity search, and I'll miss the next 3 days of flights because I'll be incarcerated.
Yep.
That fear seems like an incredible weapon that they use against you.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. And I talk about that a great deal because I think what's at its heart of it is that the language of security is the language of fundamentalism. It's a language where metaphor stops existing. Like the thing is the thing itself. You cannot say bomb in the line, because to say the word bomb is as though you have a bomb or you have even set off a bomb. Mm-hmm. And you see this even at airports. I was at the customer service line. I was there the other day and something really absurd was happening where we had paid to bring a dog on board, not checked below, but just in the cabin under seat, this tiny dog.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you have to give them like $100. They don't give you anything. You just like, you still carry it on yourself. You put it under. And then somehow they had decided that this was our luggage. So like, we also have to pay to check all our luggage except the dog. And I said, well, that's extremely, and I can't remember if you can curse on your station. I can't.
We'll bleep it out later.
I said, well, you know, that's totally fucked. And the consequence of that was that the woman, what amazed me, you know, I expect her to be like, you can't use that language around me, she can do that. And I'd be like, I'm sorry, I'm just really upset. Instead, what she did is she put her hands up in the air and she said, I don't have to be here for this. And then she just walked away.
Really?
And that was the amazing thing. Then there was no one at that counter. Like, it was just like someone had pressed a button. It was like, it's over.
Yeah.
And she just like ran away. Like the moment she heard, you could see it happen at the moment that the word appeared.
Yeah.
It was just like, it was like a bell. And it was like, now I can leave because you have said the word.
The word.
It's very
interesting. Listen, we've talked about this on the show. In fact, I think it was just last week. Mark brought up the fact that at LAX, somebody walked in with a backpack and said, there's a bomb in here. And rather than have 5 police officers come over, check it, and determine it was just a prank, they shut down LAX, sent everybody away, and basically created havoc in the city for the day. And I pointed out in that conversation last week that I, with my dark, swarthy good looks, have found myself on the receiving end of panic aboard airplanes from the stewardesses, flight attendants, and the passengers alike. I mean, it is abject panic. And what worries me is that I think that's going to translate in this presidential election into a Bradley effect we don't even know about. the middle name Hussein, the first name Barack, a guy who looks kind of like the guys on TV when they're showing the Arab world. Are Americans going to vote for that? I'm fearful of the fear. I am fearful of the fear.
Yeah. Do you touch on profiling or the implications of profiling in your monologue?
Yeah, I do. I talk a bit about profiling. I talk about the that profiling is sort of like it's. If you increase the level of fear, profiling becomes inevitable. It
Absolutely.
Just becomes logical.
Yeah.
The part that's illogical is the idea that increasing the level of fear is tied to security. Mm-hmm. And there's really a belief in the Homeland Security industry and even in the American people that those things are tied together. If you're more fearful, you'll be more secure. Like
right.
That's really believed, and mm-hmm. that's really not true.
By the way, I have to point out something here just so that you understand. I'm not against security measures at airports. In fact, mm-hmm. as somebody who travels a lot, I'm glad they're there. I just wish they were done well. Here's an example. If you travel on El Al, the Israeli airline, mm-hmm. here's the process you go through. You have to come plenty early, and then you show up in a line. There are about five or six people standing with music stands in front of them. They look like conductors. Okay? You show up to the person. They say, "Hello, I'd like to see your pass, please." And they give you a passport and everything. They look at you.
Yeah,
and
you have to do the accent like that. I mean, just like it's so dismissive.
You travel to Israel, you'll know these things, man. So anyway, they ask you questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are you going to Israel? What do you do? What are you studying? Just off the top of their head questions to start a conversation with you. Then they all trade places, every single one of them. The person who is at one music stand moves over to another music stand and so on and so forth.
Huh.
And you start over. New conversation. Totally different questions. Mm. Then they all go to the back of the room and compare notes. Did you see anything strange? Did you see anything strange? There's that one guy who offered like a weird answer. Yeah, I noticed that too. Now they're comparing notes from completely different perspectives and they identify any kind of out of the ordinary thing. That is better than all the metal detectors.
But it's unscalable.
Put together.
That process is unscalable.
It's expensive
yeah.
because it works.
All right.
But I do have to say that like one of the things that I studied a lot is read a huge number of books from different security experts. And everyone talks about Israel systems. And those were all considered after 9/11. And they were dismissed for being too expensive. But you look at how much money is now spent
right.
on the defense, on the security.
On the clear card, which is does yeah. nothing.
On the security industry. And what's fascinating is we have the money and resources. In theory, this is our generation's Manhattan Project. We have all this money to spend to make ourselves secure. I have a simple proposal. One of them was hire Blackwater. Why not hire Blackwater? It'd be great. We have these people with military experience standing in airports. Be a little scary at first
yeah.
to have them there, the scanners. But they would, I believe that they would have a good sense of suspicious people. They'd be like, I'm a suspicious person.
Yeah.
I'll look for people who seem like me,
yeah.
hardened and dangerous.
Profile.
And but they won't do that because that would cost money. Like if you look at where the money is spent, so little is spent on the personnel who are actually responsible for making the judgment calls.
Now, that's where I wanted to go with my next question.
Oh.
It seems like, and we're talking once again with Mike Daisy. Mike is a storyteller, solo performer, currently offering a show at the Woolly Mammoth Theater here in Washington, D.C. It's called If You See Something, Say Something. He joins us here in the studios at XM headquarters in Washington, D.C. on Left Jab with Mark Walsh.
And Dave Goodfriend.
All right. So what I love is it seems like every single time they test the system, i.e. put a bomb or an automatic weapon or a Tau anti-tank missile or something through the X-ray, it passes. Mm-hmm. You know, that the failure rate of these poor bastards who are staring at the screen for 4 hours at a time is galactically high.
Yeah.
So the ultimate, I would suggest the ultimate security soft link, which is I can bring something on a plane which I could then use to alter the plane, you know, turn into a new 9/11, that specific process of the screen and the baggage and is that a weapon or not, they always fail on that. Why aren't we all up in arms about that failure rate?
I'm fascinated by this. I think it's because there's a big disconnect between what actually happened on 9/11 and then the consequences afterwards. When we talk about terrorism, when we talk about terror, we're inevitably speaking about weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
But of course, the weapon that succeeded was an improvised kinetic weapon made out of an airplane that no one had anticipated.
Right.
And that's why it worked so well for them, was that they found a hole in the system and they exploited it. So we should be thinking proactively rather than reactively. The only things that came out of 9/11 that are concrete, that every security expert agrees actually work, are reinforced cockpit doors,
yep,
which were implemented long before there was a Department of Homeland Security, and they did not cost millions and millions of dollars, and they were done easily and effectively as soon as people thought of them. Everyone was like, that's a good idea, and somehow the government managed to do that. And passenger awareness,
right,
which is complete and total. Because after 9/11, no one is ever going to hijack a plane again.
Right.
Everyone would jump on top of them and stab them with their plastic forks or whatever the hell they had, you know, left in their baggage that hadn't been taken from them. So there's never going to be another hijacking, ever. Like, no one's even going to try to hijack a plane to kill themselves or just to, you know, in the old days to steal it. And that's us. That's, you know, America. I mean, we people on that fourth plane, they had total passenger awareness, you know, 45 minutes after the attacks happened.
And they fixed it.
And they fixed it at the ultimate cost to them. And they, I mean, that's democracy in action.
That's
that
right.
These people were able to confer with one another in a plane, decide to do something, and then sacrifice themselves is a remarkable thing. And I think the mythology of that story should have risen to be part of the narrative of what happened that day. And it did not, because the fear grew. And so we didn't embrace that story. It could have been a worse attack than it was. But we rose up and kept that from happening.
You know, that's a damn good message.
It really is.
Is that, that's one of the themes of your of
yeah.
your evening?
Mm-hmm.
I had never thought of it that way. And I think that's profound.
Yeah. I mean, I think that as the fear wells up, I mean, when the day after the attack, the president is in closed chambers discussing how, well, now obviously we have to go to this country that we don't yet have any evidence that they're involved, but we will. God, by God, I'm sure we will before it's over. There isn't time. If that's the news cycle and the leadership cycle, there isn't time for the mythology that's actually there to rise up. It gets supplanted with something more fearful.
Did you
and
see
darker.
The movie Flight, whatever it was, 33?
No, Flight 90. The
movie about the fourth plane.
The Pennsylvania, yeah.
You know, I didn't see it.
Yeah,
I didn't either.
I didn't see it.
I should have. I'm kicking myself for not seeing it.
Well, you know,
I didn't want to see it.
We have these things on video. I mean,
yeah,
I think it's still.
Really?
it's called
Is that the little cartridge you put in the machine in place?
Yeah, it's magical.
Let me ask you this. Is there any comedy to be had in your show?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My shows are. I mean, we hope there's comedy, right?
Right,
the nature
right.
of comedy.
The intent
of comedy. It's actually funny. But yeah, the shows I do are always a mixture of tragedy and comedy, because
so
I
what's
really
funny?
Think they have to be.
What is the funny part of this?
I think he's been funny. So
I've been
far,
trying to find.
I know, but I want his opinion about what's funny. Tell me what's funny.
He doesn't know the audience.
What
response.
Do you mean, like, ha ha funny? You mean like I make you laugh?
I make you laugh?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a clown.
Well, I mean, a lot of what is funny is things that we're touching on here. Is
the
that
absurdity.
There's an absurdity level to excessive security that's fascinating. One of the reasons that the going to the Trinity site where that first nuclear weapon went off, one of the reasons that I go there is the inherent absurdity of the fact the reason you can visit the Trinity site is that the Department of the Interior named it a National Historic Monument. But it's in the middle of a secret military base. So the Department of Defense was totally pissed off. And they were like, no. So they actually made a compromise. And the compromise is on the first Saturday in October from dawn to dusk, only then can you go. And so I love the idea that there's a monument for all American people, but it's in a protected free speech zone that you can only visit on the first Saturday in October.
There's some humor. There's some absurdity. There's what we're talking about. Boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, Mike Daisy joining us in the studio here on Left Jab. Mike is currently appearing at the Woolly Mammoth Theater in Washington, D.C. with a show called If You See Something, Say Something. And just from exposure to Mike here today, I hope that all of you go down and check out his show. It's appearing from when to when?
Oh, it opens tonight, and it runs through the 21st.
Excellent. Mike Daisy, boys and girls, be sure to check out his show, joining us here on Left Jab. We'll be back with a lot more fun stuff here on XM Satellite Radio. I'm Mark Walsh.
I'm Dave Goodfriend.
Stay tuned.
It's Left Jab